Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Susan Lanford. Welcome, Susan. It's so great to have you with me.
Thank you so much.
Now, I know this answer for some people. For you, I don't. I'm pretty sure that you didn't start life in Portland, Oregon, or even in Oregon. Tell us a bit about your origin story, where you got started.
Well, I was born in Dallas, Texas. At the time, my father was in college and also in the Army Reserves. And so he was actually away the summer that I was born. And I was living in my grandmother's house with my mother when I arrived back in the middle of the last century. We moved several times all through Texas, but eventually settled in Wichita Falls. So that's where I started first grade, and it was there that we became a family of six: my parents, myself, two younger brothers, and then my younger sister. And she is no longer with us. She died 2 years ago, and I miss her every day. So we've lived in Texas, and I say we, meaning my husband and I, all of our growing up years. We both started college and finished college and seminary in Texas, and then began to move. I think probably one of the things that's very important is that the home that I grew up in was a very religious home, a strong Christian home, and we centered our life in the life of our church. I also entered into adolescence during the days of the Jesus movement. And while I could only be a pretend hippie, if you will, I was still pretty controlled and straight-laced. However, I was certainly influenced by the music and by the call for freedom to approach people, to inquire about their spiritual lives, that sense of connecting quickly and easily with people. That was all a part of my experience with the Jesus movement. And I think probably one of my favorite memories of my teenage years is being at what was called an evangelism conference. It was for teenagers. It was in Fort Worth, Texas, and there were thousands of us. And we poured out into the streets of Fort Worth and marched and sang and laughed and cried. And it was very transformative. And certainly that was all in the air as I went on into college. So those were formative. Those were very important. And it was during my teenage years that I felt that I was being given a call to ministry. And understand, this was in the early 70s. And I was in a very conservative church. However, the student minister at the time at that church had a group that he called the Life Work Club. And it was for his students who had similarly felt a call to ministry. And most of the folks in that group were certainly, you know, the boys. He invited me into that group. And that was also transformative for me, that at the beginning of a sense of calling into ministry as a woman, that I had a confirmation from a person who was very much guiding my spiritual development at the time.
Do you know what it was that he saw in you?
Well, I mean, I guess I would say there was certainly very special language and very special ritual. And I think any of us in that group at that time would have walked down the aisle of our church to the front of our church. We would have conveyed to our pastor that I feel that God is calling me into the ministry. And at the time, and again, in the Southern Baptist world where I grew up, that was the beginning of your stamp of approval, that you were indeed a minister. However, there was certainly not a lot of role models out there for women to do that, other than some of our missionaries who conveniently served overseas and were our heroes. So that was very important. by the time I got to college, I also had a wonderful college church experience, and I met one of the Bible teachers for the college students who also was a professor at the seminary as well as a retired Air Force chaplain. And so he planted an idea in my head that, you know, surely you're headed for the seminary. When you get there, don't get the education degree, which is what most of the women were doing. He said, you go get the theology degree and major in pastoral care. So again, I think he was certainly drawing from his own experience, but his guidance and his saying to me, this is where I see the next steps unfolding for you. It was very important, and I think it did help to shape the eventual place that I went with my life and career, which was into ministry and then into chaplaincy.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Texas Christian in Fort Worth, Texas, and then actually stayed in Fort Worth and went to seminary at Southwestern Seminary. And my husband, Randy, and I married right after we both graduated from college, so we started seminary together.
So you did answer one of the questions I wanted to know, and that was, what denomination were you raised in? Southern Baptist.
Right.
And that's pretty conservative, as you were saying.
Very conservative. And at the time that Randy and I started seminary, and by the time we graduated, it had taken its, you know, very sharp turn into probably more, as you or anyone would know it today, much more fundamentalist. And it was different. It was troubling. A lot of our experiences as we wrapped up seminary and then began to serve in the first couple of churches where we served was to be among people who were grappling with that change. And by the time that we got to the year 2000 and had moved to Little Rock, Arkansas for him to serve in a church, it was a church that was dually aligned with the Southern Baptist Convention, but also with a group called the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, which had formed right in the aftermath of that sharp turn to the far right. And its intent was to try to hold the middle and to preserve what they saw as the best of our historical roots, to be much more moderate. And so actually, it was in Little Rock through the work of that church and the affiliation with Cooperative Baptists that I actually was finally ordained as a minister, and where I also got my endorsement for chaplaincy. That move coincided with beginning my chaplaincy training. So that was also very pivotal.
So in those early days, maybe as a child or a youth, what was your family's reaction to the idea that maybe this oldest daughter was planning to possibly serve in some capacity as a quote-unquote pastor? Or maybe I shouldn't even put that in quotes.
Yeah, I think like a lot of things, that when you know someone and when you love someone, you have a different lens through which to view any particular stance or issue. And so while I'm not sure that it was something that my father especially would have imagined as the place where his daughter would serve, he was very supportive. When I had my ordination council, he and one of my brothers came and participated, and that was certainly very significant to me. So I would say that they have been very supportive, and I would say that that grows out of the love of family, without a doubt, first, and then out of the love of faith and the desire to be very affirming of anyone who feels a call that they believe has come from God that is ordering the pathway that they're going to walk. So I'm very grateful for that. You know, it's interesting, both of my brothers became petroleum engineers just like my dad, and my sister and I were both English majors, and we both married ministers. So I think initially the way some of that played out was as the minister's wife who was expected to do anything and everything. And I did my best to play that role. I was glad to. I don't think there's any program of the church that I've never had some role in, including some of the mission ministries for the boys. I mean, I taught in every kind of capacity that was available within the Baptist church. And each time we would move and Randy would begin his work at another church, the question I always asked was, I know why we're here, but I don't know why I'm here. And so finding the answer to that question was very, very important to me. And part of my story and my, I guess, to use the words of my youth, part of my testimony would be that in every place that we moved, I did find an answer to that question. And up until the time I started that chaplaincy training, it seemed like an odd collection of many different things. But for me, there was always a thread of ministry in it. So I always felt that I was being given ways to explore and to expand that sense of calling. And then when I began to work in chaplaincy, I found that all of those disparate experiences, they actually had been woven in a way that I couldn't see in the midst of them. But there was a backward glance where I began to understand how I had gotten to where I got as that really important chapter of my life started to unfold.
So I want just a little bit of your meeting Randy story. Obviously, the church has been an important piece of your life forever. Yes. And so when you met him and both of you were going to seminary, first of all, how did you meet? But then also, you were going to seminary too. You were going together. So I'm assuming that he maybe understood that at some point.
Well, I have said all along when people have asked that question that it's all very boring. We're childhood sweethearts. We grew up in the same home church, the same hometown. We didn't actually meet until we were 13, but that's when we met. But our histories are very intertwined before that. Then we began to date when we were 16. We went to different colleges. He's a Baylor Bear. But we dated off and on from the time we were 16 until we graduated and got married. Actually, the day after he graduated and the week before I did, we snuck a wedding and a honeymoon in between that week and then moved directly to Fort Worth to start seminary. So he was aware of that. We both knew that we were on that track together. So it was a natural next thing that we started married life in the seminary and knew that we would be, we thought, serving churches all of our life.
And was the idea ever, we'll just co-pastor?
No, I don't think so. We did a few things like co-preaching, if you will. He was never the senior pastor at any church that we served, but he did do a lot of the preaching, and he would invite me, and we would do that. Outside of our church life, pretty early on, through the influence of the first pastor that we both knew and worked with, he encouraged us to get training in the marriage enrichment movement. And so we have done that off and on, much more, I would say, in the first half of our marriage. But that was something that we also did together, and that was very much a co-facilitation, if you will. So we're very used to doing that, standing side by side.
And that works for you, working fairly closely together?
It does, yes.
That is not always the case.
That is true. And, you know, I work right now with a woman who co-pastors a church with her husband. They do it beautifully. I really don't think that was the calling that Randy and I had. We're very different people. Now, we've got everything that you want to share in common, we have, which is our Texas roots, our very deep faith, our understanding of how faith is the way you define and order and build and grow your family. We both love to study the scripture. We both love that kind of in-depth discussion where you get into a a word, a verse, a passage, and try to find every bit of the riches that are there. So we have a lot that we share in common, and we are very, very different people. So it's been good that we've had different ministries, I think.
So once Randy started doing pastorates at various churches, was that always with the Southern Baptists, or was there ever a divergence of denomination? Or
yes, always with Southern Baptist. And then the church I mentioned in Little Rock was the one that had a dual affiliation, Southern Baptist and Cooperative Baptist. At one point then, after Little Rock, what we never expected to happen, we moved back to our hometown, but it was because of the job that I was offered, and that was working with the spiritual care department at the hospital in our hometown. And so when we got there, one of the things that was most meaningful to him is that he pastored two very small Presbyterian churches. He would go up the highway about an hour, work with one church, and then finish 30 minutes further on up the highway, then do church again with the second church. And I will say that those two Presbyterian churches were very, very dear to both of us, especially though to him. And then with our move to Portland and then now to Vancouver, Washington, the move to Portland Mennonite, certainly the pull was, first of all, that our oldest son, Jay, and his family are members at the church. And while we had every intention of doing what we finally had the freedom to do, and that is visit around to a lot of churches, we just never seemed to get around to it. Part of the reason why we were so excited to move here was to have a shared family life with our children and grandchildren. And as our lives and their lives were more and more busy, and as ours got planted across the river, it seemed like that we'll see you at church on Sunday just kind of became what was most important in building that shared family life that matters so deeply. At the same time, ever since Jay and Becky came to Portland and began at Portland Mennonite, we have had wonderful conversations and really had explored all of what they were learning and how that was contributing to their own spiritual growth, how important it was that they had found that congregation. And from all the way back to my seminary days and through some very interesting reading that I had done in the meantime, I had always loved the Mennonite story and been drawn to the Radical Reformation, to the peace churches. And so there was also a sense, not just family, but also there had always been certainly first a curiosity, but then more a real sense of pull toward people who had lived their faith out of so much, so much torture, so much humiliation, so much challenge. And finding, you know, all that I could understand, finding, you know, such a purity of faith that had persisted over hundreds and hundreds of years. I'm absolutely fascinated by that and drawn to that. And so we, Randy and I, this has been an incredible gift to come to this point in our life as senior adults and to be given this opportunity for such a fresh spiritual journey with a very old story that I feel like has come to, you know, 2020 and is just making such a difference. And, you know, I'm so drawn to that we are here to bring about the peace of the city. And certainly that one of the ways we do that is as each of us individually find our own interior connection to peace. That just speaks to what has mattered to me my whole life.
As a seminary student, and maybe before that, you learned about the Anabaptists, I'm guessing, so that the idea of Mennonites and Anabaptists was not a brand new concept for you.
Not at all. And, you know, one of the key textbooks of the history of the Anabaptists is written by Dr. Estes, and he was one of my seminary professors. So here is this Southern Baptist professor whose area of expertise and study was the Anabaptist story. So that was the beginning of it. And I have found that very book in our church library. So that certainly started it. He taught that with such reverence for the story and with such detail about how the first Anabaptists came together and then all of the challenges that followed. So absolutely taken with it from that first moment.
So we are in the midst of a pandemic, and I believe you are still working. So tell us a bit about what you do and how the pandemic has maybe affected your day-to-day or week-to-week work.
I have said multiple times during any given week, sometimes during any given day, I am so grateful that I have been able to go to work. The work that's happening in healthcare is certainly big, big part of the story of our lived experience with the pandemic. So I'm grateful to be in the midst of it. I would like to think that what my hospitals are doing and my system, along with everyone else's, are helping to make a difference. Certainly, I think in this area, after the first initial crisis that hit the shores in Washington, I feel like one thing that happened here, you know, in Oregon and Washington is we got a crash course in pandemic, and we were forced to learn those lessons early. So, you know, one of the experiences was that when March hit, at least for me, for our hospitals, we went into incident command, which is crisis management every day, and still have that now on an intermittent basis.
So are you serving as a chaplain, or what is your title exactly?
Well, right now, I've I've been here almost 4 years to the day, and I'm on my third job. I started as the manager of spiritual care for the Longview and the Vancouver hospitals in the Peace Health System. My job now is to be the director of mission services and volunteer services. And under the big umbrella of mission services, one of those is still spiritual care, along with several other important service lines. And then volunteer services, I think that's self-explanatory. But I still do that through both Vancouver and Longview and points in between, wherever we have Peace Health hospitals and clinics. So part of my privilege during the pandemic has been not every day, but many of those days, to be the chaplain in the room at incident command to check on those folks who are working, you know, 14, 16, 18 hour days and doing it 7 days a week. Fortunately, that initial, say, 3 months, that was true every day. It's not quite as intense. Sir, I mean, we've not settled into anything that is predictable because we're learning more every day, as we all are, watching the news and following the news. But at the same time, the crush of solving problems just constantly, 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 that has let up just a bit. But I still have the privilege of being the chaplain in the room and helping to encourage the people who are really trying to bear the burdens of everyone who is on the front line and doing the work. So I really consider that a privilege. And as I've talked with my chief executives about, you know, we're in a new fiscal year. Where do you see your work going in the new fiscal year? You know, one of the things that is really clear to me is I may be an administrator right now, but my sense of that initial calling to be the chaplain in the room, I think it's been enlivened. I feel like it's gotten new life, and I am very grateful for that.
So when you say that you're in the room, you are literally in the room.
That's correct.
So you actually keep going to work, unlike so many others.
Yes. And again, I'm very, very grateful for that. It means the world to me. And there's a lot of extra things that I'm doing. One of the things I'm in charge of is the facility entrance process at our Longview Hospital. And that's got a lot of controls on it. That comes out of the CDC, comes out of our accrediting agencies, and what has to happen before anybody is let through the door. That's been a whole new world for me, a whole new operational process. And again, those folks are heroes. They're trying to both welcome everyone who comes in the door as well as screen everyone to make sure that it's safe for them and for everybody who's already inside that they come through the door. So they have to be diplomats every moment. And I feel very privileged to work with them.
You are actually working with the caretakers, the caregivers, and the employees as opposed to the actual patients.
That's correct.
And I think oftentimes we don't think about that somebody needs to be doing what you're doing. It's almost a little invisible. Do you ever feel that way?
No, I don't. I appreciate your question and thank you for asking it. I don't feel that way. For one thing, you can't see it, but when I clip on my badge, I still have a badge insert that reads chaplain. I still identify as that role, even though the work that I do is administrative most every day. I will tell you that at least for any hospital chaplain that you might meet, I think they would tell you that one of the things they feel is most important is how they show up as an encourager and a support to the other caregivers. And they feel it as a real, you know, push-pull. Because certainly their work is with, first of all, is with our patients and families. As you well know, that work has been redefined during the pandemic. So some of what hospital chaplains are doing right now is helping to facilitate those virtual connections over iPads and other social media. And that's been different, and they've had to struggle with, do I feel that I am doing all that I could in this? And right now, if this is all that's available to us and they facilitate it, my clear answer to them is, yes, you are doing all that you can. And it does make a difference. And certainly we had the anecdotal affirmation that tells us that does make a difference. What I've been doing and what I want to do more of is to really pay attention to those moments where my path crosses with another's. And that is in hallway encounters, that's in the cafeteria, that is in meetings, even if they are meetings virtually. And to be listening with that chaplain ear as much as I listen with that administrator's ear. And those are two very different kinds of listening. But I want to do that. I want to be the chaplain in the room.
Well, Susan, that half hour went very quickly. Thank you so much for taking the time to help us to get to know you a little bit better, to learn some of your story. And let me just say for all of us at PMC, thank you so much for the really important work that you're doing right now in the midst of this pandemic.
That is so kind. It's absolutely been my privilege. And Gloria, thank you. And to my PMC family, stay well, please. Stay safe. And peace be with you all.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. I hope you've discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.